This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Right, it's the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast. Best bits from the start of a brand new week, Monday, April the 22nd. The waters might have receded, but the cleanup continues and the knock-on effects of last week's rains are still being felt. Questions being asked and a couple of answers being delivered right here on the Business Breakfast. Weather was very much a part and parcel of the conversation this morning. Why? Well, the weather of last week and the knock-on effects of that. But equally, we've got some not great weather reports for this week. Nothing compared to what we had last week. But that obviously has caused a little bit of concern amongst residents and citizens alike. So we'll get the latest from the Aero News team on those weather reports. Looking back at the week that was, though, and the fallout from the storm damage of last week, we spoke to the director and lead analyst of the insurance rating company S&P Global Ratings. Emir Muzhkic joined us to discuss, potential of the amount that the bill, he couldn't put a number on it. No one can put a number on it at the moment. But there were a few buts here about the fact that there might not be as many payouts as some would expect, just because of the nature of the storm and the nature of much of the damage to cars, property and otherwise. Talking of property, caught up with Maria Morris, the CEO and the founder of Maria Morris Real Estate. She was in to give her experience and expertise and professional opinion on, the sort of fallout from the storm damage. So many people have properties affected by the storm, affected by the waters. Is that therefore going to inform the decision as to where you live, where you rent, where you buy in the future? If so, what's it going to mean for the property market as a whole? And we spoke to the former executive director of the IMF for India, Bangladesh, Bhutan and Sri Lanka. The economist Surjit Bala joined us live from India to discuss A, Indian GDP, B, Indian election this week and the significance that could have. That's all coming right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast.
Serena, let's talk about the weather, because we have heard from the National Centre of Meteorology. We've been getting lots of questions about that. I mean, among others, Fatima, Dev, Haroon, Jennifer and others. What is the situation when it comes to the weather for the UAE in general and Dubai in particular?
Yeah, so light to moderate showers have been forecast for the next few days. So we've got light showers today, winds up to 30 to 35 kilometres per hour. That's mostly Abu Dhabi. It'll then move east towards the mountains. Heavier rainfall on Tuesday, winds up to 40 kilometres per hour in parts. So just to put it in perspective for you, the adverse weather conditions of last week on Tuesday, you had winds up to 70 kilometres per hour in parts. So it's not going to be as intense as that. A bit more detail, National Centre of Meteorology forecasting the light to moderate rain over some parts of the country. Again today, it's islands and western regions, and that rainfall expected from midday onwards. But the cloud obviously forming, overcast for the next few days. Things are supposed to improve by Wednesday, temperatures dropping, the cloud moving towards Oman, but just very light to moderate rainfall. It's supposed to be light today, getting a bit worse tomorrow. You can expect maybe a few showers, Dubai, Sharjah, Ras Al Khaimah, Umm Al Quwain, but definitely not to the extent that we saw of last week.
Good to know. Thanks very much indeed. Now, let's get a bit more detail about the recovery from the storms and what happens next. We've talked about it in our business headlines. You've talked about it at the Aero News Centre. This initiative from Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince of Dubai, what do we know? What's happening?
So over the weekend, he's actually directed the Dubai Land Department and the Real Estate Regulatory Agency, RERA, to coordinate with property developers to get all communities managed by the developers back to normal as soon as possible. So according to an update from the Dubai Land Department, all residential management companies and real estate developers have been requested to offer services at no additional charge. So community management companies working with the Dubai Land Department will be providing various free services. So those include distribution of food where necessary, especially for those communities that are blocked off by floodwaters, alternative housing, assistance with returning to your homes, including interior cleaning and pest control services, obviously off the back of what Georgia was saying earlier with regards to what she'll be discussing on the agenda. Residents also being assisted with monitoring and documenting damages caused by the rain during the period covered by insurance, as well as assessing potential risk to properties. But these services are being offered by Dubai Holding, Nakheel, Emaar, Union Properties and Dubai Investments Park. And on Friday, you had the Aero News team reporting that Emaar Properties had already announced that they will cover all costs for repairs of homes within its communities in Dubai that have been affected by the recent severe weather conditions. So that was just part of the directives off the back of the meeting that His Highness had with heads of government entities.
And Tom, one of the things you picked up on, because we're the Business Breakfast, so we look at the money, was 80 billion dirhams. That's the ticket price of the new sewage system. Now, this has not been designed within the past 72 hours or so. This was in the works anyway, and it's a very long-term project. But it's something that Sheikh Hamdan has been mentioning, isn't it?
Yeah, we know there was a couple of executive council meetings over the course of the weekend in reaction to the flood damages and the storms. One of the big ones come out of that one is the state-of-the-art sewage system, 80 billion dirhams being set aside. It's been greenlit already as part of a number of the initiatives moving forward, the urban planning initiatives here in the city. So investment into the infrastructure of the city to mitigate some of the issues that we might have seen in recent days.
Serena, so that is the automobiles. What about the planes and the trains?
Okay, so flights, you had updates over the weekend. Emirates Airline have restored regular flight schedules as of Saturday, April 20th. In an open letter, the airline's president, Tim Clark, apologised to every customer who's had their travel plans disrupted due to the recent extreme weather conditions, saying it will take us some more days to clear the backlog of rebooked passengers and bags. We ask for our customers' patience and understanding. I mean, we're talking about they've said about 30,000 pieces of left behind luggage that they need to reunite with owners. So apparently a special task force has been initiated just dedicated for that. Also on Saturday, Fly Dubai sharing news. They have also returned to operating full flight schedules from terminals 2 and 3 at Dubai International Airport. And that's basically the flights. When it comes to Dubai Metro, I know you've had messages in on inquiries regarding that. Fully operational on the Green Line, both directions. That was as of Friday. Red Line, seems maintenance work is still ongoing there. Last update, some services still suspended. We're talking on Passive Equity, Mashraq and Energy stations, but trains running between Centrepoint Expo 2020 stations and between Jebel Ali and UAE Exchange stations. Those are direct routes with no stops. There may be some instances where people have been asked to disembark, but they are being redirected by personnel that are on duty.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed. People staying abreast of things on various ARN News Centre social media channels. Serena Kelly and the team with us throughout the day on Dubai Eye 103.8 FM. Now, let's look in a bit more detail at some of the other economic stories making headlines today, including India. Elections. It is the first full week of the elections in India. They're going to last through April and May and finish on the 1st of June. We've been looking, of course, because we're the Business Breakfast, at the economic implications of this. Great guest this morning, Surjit Bala. He's an economist. Now, he's former executive director of the IMF for India. In fact, the wider region, including Bangladesh, Bhutan and Sri Lanka as well. He's also worked with the Modi administration. So you've got to understand that whenever you're hearing from a commentator on the Indian election, as with the US election or indeed any other, there is some partisanship there. But there's no question that Dr. Bala is a very experienced economist. And we asked him, as Indians go to the polls, what is the economic story on their lips? We know the world, journalists like us, are looking at the headline figures. India, the fastest growing major economy in the world. Yep, we know that. But what are people talking about on the ground? This is what Dr. Surjit Bala told us.
They're talking about jobs. They're talking about the economy. And it's not 6.5%. It's close to 8%. And the other thing to know about the Indian growth rate compared to even 10, 15 years ago is that our population growth rate is now down to about 1% per annum. So which means a GDP growth rate of 8% is a per capita growth rate of 7%. Now we can talk about what has led to this, and which is substantial amounts of infrastructure investment. And investment as a percent of GDP now in India today, in real terms, is somewhere around 37-38%, which is the highest that it's ever achieved.
Dr. Surjit Bala there, economist joining us on the line from New Delhi earlier on today. We also get to talk not just about the economy of India, but for a change, the economy of Colombia. Currently number one on Spotify in Colombia. It's a collaboration between a Colombian artist and an American DJ. We're talking about that because late last week on Friday, the UAE signed a comprehensive economic partnership agreement with Colombia. And Colombia said it wants to attract nearly $1 billion of UAE investment on the back of it. Things like green hydrogen, the digital economy. We've been speaking to Dan Richards of Emirates MBD. These are his key economic takeaways.
And this is just the latest of a trade deal to be announced. And indeed, it's the second in Latin America this year after that agreed with Costa Rica just recently. Colombia has said that it hopes to attract $700 million of investment from the UAE, mentioning in particular green hydrogen and the digital economy as areas it hopes to attract funding into, really underscoring the UAE's growing expertise in these fields.
Dan Richards of Emirates MBD.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's talk insurance now. Emma Mushkik is Director and Lead Analyst for Insurance Ratings at S&P Global Ratings, based here in the UAE, and joins us now on the line from Abu Dhabi. Emma, good morning. Thanks very much indeed for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Emma, keen to talk to you about your new report at S&P Global Ratings about the regional insurance industry. You say insurance companies plow ahead even as geopolitical tensions intensify. Now, this report came out independent of the storms that we had last week, and we will get to it. First of all, though, what's your quick take at S&P in terms of the impact of the storms on the local insurance industry?
Yeah, so look, I think that's the $1 million question at the moment. Everyone is looking to get a number or share a number. I think what we can say at this point in time, obviously, looking at the storm last week, the economic damage was significant. But that said, I think we think the insurance losses are probably more on the manageable side. And why we're saying that is because, if you look at the motor insurance cases, we know that usually floods are only covered under the comprehensive policy, so many people don't have comprehensive covers. And then also there are some limitations within the comprehensive policies. Typically, they only pay if a vehicle is parked. Then property covers are typically reinsured. The premiums are passed through to international reinsurers. And we also know that a lot of people don't have home insurance. So it will be a big loss for insurance companies in the region, and particularly here in the UAE. We do understand that companies are still gathering data. We spoke with some of the larger insurance companies last week, but it's still too early to give any indication in terms of loss. But it's fair to say that not all the risks and losses are insured, and some of the insured losses will be passed on to international reinsurers.
In terms of who's insuring, particularly if we look at cars, you mentioned those at the moment, is that mainly insured by local companies based here in the UAE or by international names?
So those type of risks would usually be insured by local companies. The retention for risks like car insurance is relatively high, so that means risks would be retained by local companies. But what often happens is if there's an accumulation of claims, let's say if 10, 20, 30 cars are damaged because of the same event, there could be a reinsurance protection that kicks in, so-called excess of loss cover, which then up to a certain amount is covered by local insurance companies, and then it gets ceded on to international reinsurers. So all in all, I think what I'm trying to say is that losses are probably limited, for local insurers. But that said, especially companies that write a lot of motor business, for them, the picture may be a little bit more different than for companies that write less motor insurance business.
Finally, on the storms, before we get on to your report, a lot is made of how governments declare a national incident like the one that we had last week with the storms here in the UAE, whether it's considered force majeure, whether it's considered a national emergency or so on. That can sometimes impact what insurance companies do or do not have to pay out for. What's the situation in general, and what are the specifics here in the UAE at the moment when it comes to the classification of what exactly happened last week?
I think the classification usually is important when it comes to business interruption. The business interruption covers would typically kick in under property insurance. So, for example, if a mall is not operational and a mall needs to be closed, then I believe a business interruption cover may kick in. But we also know that, and I think, you know, we have to really thank everyone who's helped clean up after the storm in the UAE. I was in Dubai yesterday. I live in Abu Dhabi. And I have to say, 90-95% of the roads are back to normal. All the malls are open again. So clearly, you know, it was a big, big event. But it seems like that business as usual is underway. I know the airport was closed, or at least a lot of flights were cancelled. But again, it doesn't seem that to be the case that there was a long interruption period in terms of business. Which again means that the insurance protection and insurance payouts could be limited.
Emir, let's look more broadly at the insurance industry here in the UAE. Your report came out on the 17th of April, so it was written and signed off before the storms happened. And you say it's, broadly speaking, looks like a strong picture for the GCC insurance market. You say their top line growth is expanding between 5 and 15% this year.
Yes, that's right. So, and that's quite substantial. And looking backwards, 2023, we saw even faster growth, particularly in markets like Saudi Arabia, the UAE. We've seen now double-digit growth for a number of years. Saudi Arabia grew by 25% last year and the year before as well, due to numerous reasons. Obviously, we all know that the economy is doing quite well. Oil prices is relatively high. There has been an extension of mandatory medical covers, an extension of infrastructure projects, leading to obviously an increase in insurance demand. And then at the same time, we have also seen an increase in motor rates in Saudi Arabia in particular, but also in the UAE in the second part of the year. If we think back to 2020, 2021, we do know that there were fewer claims, particularly on the motor insurance side. What happened back then is a lot of insurance companies introduced discounts, but because the economy has returned to normal, the number of claims has gone up, the frequency of claims has gone up, and as a result of that, a lot of insurance companies have been forced to adjust their prices and rates. So those were really the main drivers. I think for this year, we see a similar picture. Insurance demand is still strong. Infrastructure projects are still going on. We have seen some adjustments again for motor and medical rates, also some extension of covers. So those would be the main drivers in our view this year in terms of premium growth.
Less than a minute left with you. Traditionally here in this region, when I've been covering this story, it's been one of underinsurance. Insurance as a percentage of GDP, much lower in the Gulf region than to other more mature economies. Is that still the case, and is the gap narrowing?
It is still the case, but the gap is narrowing. I think the main underinsurance is on the P&C side to some extent. Home insurance, I think, following the storm in the UAE. Property and casualty, okay. Apologies. So non-life insurance, in other words. So home insurance, we all know that penetration rates are very low. I think there will be a surge towards that cover following the storm. We also know that on the life insurance side, there's a big gap, particularly in some countries like Qatar, Saudi Arabia. That's for cultural reasons, but also the government obviously is not particularly pushing.
Emma, we're going to have to leave it there. Fascinating conversation. Appreciate your time. The thoughts of Emma Mushkik there from S&P Global Ratings, talking insurance.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
There's certainly been one conversation that has dominated lunch parties, get-togethers, dinner parties over the course of the weekend. It's the age-old question, where were you during the storms? And what has been the fallout for you? Just been talking there to the team from S&P about the potential payouts for insurance companies, how much it's going to cost them, how much is it going to cost to rebuild as well, and so many individual stories, be it property or, of course, possessions that were lost as a result of the storm. So let's look at it from a property point of view. Let's bring an expert into the field here to give their thoughts on what is going to be an opportunity of reflection for many in light of last week's floods. Should buyers start looking at who the contractor is and not just the developer when choosing their next Dubai home? To answer these questions, a property expert with a wealth of experience both over in the UK and more recently here in the UAE. Moved to Dubai just over, a decade ago, now runs her own boutique real estate firm specialising in prime and super prime properties across some of Dubai's most coveted communities. It's a warm welcome to the founder and the CEO of Maria Morris Real Estate in Dubai. It is Maria Morris. Good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you on board this morning. I mean, I don't know if I'm making too much of this morning, Maria, but I was thinking about it over the weekend just by the fact that so many people were talking about it. And I think it's a Tom Urquhart opinion that it's made a number of homeowners here, whether you own your property, whether you rent your property, have a little think about where they are living and where they next want to live in terms of the potential of knock-on effects as well. Is that putting too much on it or not?
No, I think, obviously what happened last week was unprecedented, but it did give the opportunity, as you say, for reflection, I think, in the last week. And those criteria, as you say, that are important to people in terms of how they use their home, how they want to spend time in their home, whether that's an apartment, or a villa, and which part of the city they want to live in. So it's not just about the quality of the construction itself. I think it's also about the area and how the overall infrastructure has fared. But I think, as I say, it's a point of reflection, really, to say, right, do I want a well-designed quality villa or apartment? Mm. Is that important to me? How will I use this space? So I think that's really, as I say, the reset that people are now looking at how they live and what kind of space they want to live it in.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because we all know that the storm was unprecedented, but it doesn't beg the issue that we've had more rain in recent times. People have had to deal with more leaks. They've had to deal with a few more infrastructure problems. They might have contacted their property managers or the developer and said, look, can we fix this? And it hasn't been fixed. Again, I suppose, and we don't want to start comparing developers and developments to other developments, but it's happening at the moment as well. And will people sort of fashion their choices moving forward on developers or developments that have fared well in the floods?
I think potentially. And as you say, over the last few days, I think there hasn't been I was at a lunch yesterday and everyone was asking me about, what's happening with the property market? Where should we buy? Where should we move to? We're thinking of moving. Does that affect what's happened from last week? So it's always a dinner party topic, as you say. But I think with what's so interesting with what happened last week is it's not just new versus old. It's not just this developer is better than that developer. It's actually looking at those individual villas and apartments and the build quality and how that fared. So because a lot of people assumed that the older villas might not have fared so well. And we've got some renovated villas in Al Barari, as an example, where our HQ are. And they, were so robust and there was no leak. So I think that, people automatically assume that the new build would fare better, which some did, and the older properties would suffer. But that actually wasn't the case. It was more of an individual area issue.
I ain't an engineer. I ain't a chartered surveyor. But are people going to sort of tap into those qualities now? Will they look at, will they look to the contractor? Will they look to the quality of the build before buy?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually, again, storms aside, I think that's a transition that we've been seeing over the last 3 to 5 years anyways. You know, when we were looking at, for example, we led the residential consultancy on Atlantis the Royal at the time, started back in 2014. And we said this has to be best in class globally, not best in class for Dubai. You know, it's going to be an icon here, but how we design it needs to be in line with international design measures. And I think that's what's going to happen now. I think people are going to say, right, enough value engineering with these contractors. Who do we actually, as a developer, who do we want to use that we know is going to deliver, that is going to deliver quality and that aligns with our brand? And I think that's the transition that we're going to continue to see going forward, not just who can do it the cheapest, who can, you know, say they'll do it the quickest. And I think that will then pass on to the end user, the consumer.
What about passing on to price? I mean, is this going to have an impact on price? We know that the market is flying at the moment, et cetera. Will it have an impact, negative or positive, on pricing moving forward?
Well, look, I think from a commercial standpoint, the developers, or even if it's a single developer doing one-off renovations, they're going to be looking at their margins and they're going to want to protect their margins. So that normally means that it's passed on to the buyer ultimately. But I think what's also been interesting over the last few years, especially with the wave of new, the population's increased, the new buyers that are coming into the region to call it home, is that they're looking for that quality and they'll pay the premium. You know, so I think that we're going to see this shift where people are going to be actually willing to pay a little bit more for a house that is well designed and the quality of materials are on par with a global level, not just a regional level.
We know that super prime and prime is flying at the moment. We know a lot of that's being driven by international buyers as well. This was a story that went international as well. Any risk that international buyers will have their appetite dampened?
I don't think so. I think we've had, Dubai overall as a city, you know, if you had 10 boxes that it checks, you know, I think 9 of them would not be weather related. And obviously now it has been in the headlines. But I think, what we're getting from our clients from overseas is just more questions on. They can't actually believe, you know, they're looking at things on social media and they're like, oh, my God, the airport was this. But actually, when you say to them, but look how quickly the city has come together to recover. I mean, I don't think there's many global cities that would have reacted as quickly as Dubai and the wider UAE has. And the sense of community as well. I think that's another thing that people are looking for when they make the move over here, and the safety and the, you know, all those other good things. So, yes, it is a question. Whether it's a concern, I wouldn't go that far, but people are certainly asking the question.
Last question. I've got 30 seconds left with you. Emaar, first and only developer to come out publicly and make a pledge to their residents. Can we expect others to follow or not?
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming days. I think as we've only got 30 seconds, is that a good enough answer? Let's wait and see. We'll wait and watch and see.
Should we watch this space?
Exactly. I'll come back next week and we can do it again.
No, Maria, bless you. Thanks so much indeed for your time this morning.
It's
Maria
been a Morris, pleasure. Great to see you guys.
Founder and CEO of Maria Morris Real Estate here in Dubai.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Where we focus now on the economics of India. That is currently one of the most popular Bollywood songs in India, top of the top 20 list on our sister Bollywood station, City 1016 here in Dubai. Joining us on the line to talk the economics of the elections is Dr. Surjit Bala, one of India's most prominent economists. He is formerly Executive Director for India at the International Monetary Fund and has also been chairperson for the High-Level Advisory Group on Trade at the Ministry of Commerce and also Economic Advisor in India. Dr. Bala, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So we know the headline numbers for GDP in India, the world's strongest performing major economy at the moment. What's the economic story on the lips of Indian voters as we enter the first week of the elections?
So you want me to talk about the elections, or you want me to talk about the GDP, or both?
I want you to talk about this, the economic story that Indians are talking about as they head to the elections, because guys like me look at Indians' GDP and think, wow, 6.5% growth, fastest growing major economy. But what are real people on the ground talking about when it comes to the economy?
Well, I think the same that you are. They're talking about jobs. They're talking about the economy. And it's not 6.5%. It's close to 8%. And the other thing to note about the Indian growth rate compared to even 10, 15 years ago is that our population growth rate is now down to about 1% per annum. So which means a GDP growth rate of 8% is a per capita growth rate of 7%. Now we can talk about what has led to this, and basically it's the age-old story, which is substantial amounts of infrastructure investment. you know, and investment as a percent of GDP now in India today, in real terms, is somewhere around 37-38%. Which is the highest that it's ever achieved. And the last time we had this kind of a investment ratio was back in 2004 to 2011. I believe it was in 2007-08, just the year before the financial crisis. This time, inflation is very well behaved. And this is a story in most developing countries, unlike the fragile five in 2013, and the continuous story about emerging markets, that it is inflation in emerging markets is much lower than inflation in the developed world. Though now they are converging, but I think that's the other big takeaway from the post-COVID experience.
So clearly a very robust economy in India at the moment. It's difficult to pick holes in India's economic story over the past 10 years under the Modi administration. But of course, he and the administration does have his critics. We've spoken to some of them. Opposition party spokespeople sometimes point to the fact that the growth, while very impressive, hasn't necessarily been evenly shared among the poorest people in India. To what extent is that criticism valid, and what can be done about it?
Let me say that it is valid 0%, because let's look at the data. The only data, you know, opposition politicians have a habit around the world of distorting the evidence in order to try and advance their case. But let's look very specifically at the question that you have asked, and that has to do with the recent data that was released, the entire consumer expenditure survey, and that showed that basically poverty had been reduced to less than 1%, according to the 1.9 PPP line. But more importantly, that for the first time in Indian history, and I believe in world history, that real inequality in consumption has come down in India. In the 22-23 data that just got released, compared to 2011-12. Now, you know, I've done a fair amount of research over the last 30-40 years on inequality, and this has not been observed before. So the opposition might claim that inequality has gone up and not been shared, but the results are 100%. 180% or 100% opposite to what they are claiming. So just look at the data. I have always claimed, let the data speak, not politicians and not distorted interpretations.
Dr. Bala, we've only got about a minute left with you. Very quickly, one of the many books you've written is Citizen Raj, Indian Elections 1952 to 2019. A quick word on the fairness of these elections. Around the world, there's a big focus on how fair are elections, none more so than in the United States. 30 seconds on that, please.
Okay. I have a recent book out called How We Vote, and the big conclusion in that book is that how people in India vote and around the world is what Bill Clinton said in 1992. It is the economy, stupid. And that is the big story about the Indian economy today, Indian elections today. And it is important to find out why is it that we've grown. And that's because of the set of policies followed by Prime Minister Modi and the Indian economy. So we're doing very well. And the voters are likely to vote with their pocketbooks in terms of how well what happens on June 4th when the results of the elections will be out.
Dr. Bala, fascinating talking to you. I do hope we speak again during and after the elections. But for now, Dr. Surjit Bala, former head of the IMF in India, one of India's most prominent economists, joining us live on the line from New Delhi on the first Monday morning of the elections in India.
This is the Bite-sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.